702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
So today's Thursday, and on Thursdays we always speak to the author of a local non-fiction book. And today we're speaking to Mark Shaw, who is the director of the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. And his book is called Give Us More Guns, How South Africa's Gangs Were Armed. It's about one of the most brutal criminal acts of the post-apartheid era and its consequences devastating. At the center of all of it is this police colonel, Christian Prinsloo, who decided to sell millions of rands worth of guns to fund his children's university fees. And he was the former head of the Gauteng Firearm License Division. And it's estimated that 9,000 guns were sold onto the streets and that at least 1,000 people died by those guns on the Cape Flats particularly. And he's done hundreds of interviews with police, with the criminal underworld, and it tells the story of this callous crime for the first time. So Mark, thank you so much. A great pleasure to have you on the Midday Report today.
I'm Andy. Pleasure to be with you.
So before delving into this crime, let's just zoom in, out and place it in context. A lot has been written and spoken about the Cape Ganglands, the history, the politics. But let's just place this crime in context, this Colonel Christian Prinsloo. Set that scene for us.
Well, the Cape Gangs, I suppose, was a place where he thought through an intermediary there would be a willing buyer or buyers for guns. And the book tells the story of how he sought out that intermediary and how he began to deliver the guns. So, and the gangs, extremely violent, in conflict over drug turf, were very eager buyers. And so this is the scene, Mandy, the sort of willing buyer, willing seller, and then the guns started to flow.
And the gangs always had access to guns stolen during burglaries or other ad hoc crimes, but they were hard to come by and they were considered really precious. But then suddenly, the Cape Flats was awash with firearms, and these guns came primarily from Z88s used by the cops, but then also the guns handed in by unsuspecting citizens as well.
Yeah, interesting. Speaking to people within the gang environment, gangs, of course, extremely eager to get their hands on guns. And they had always historically seen the state, so robbing police stations or defense force establishments, etc. They had always seen the state as a place where you could get bulk guns. What Prinsloo saw, I think, was this market. And the guns that he had access to in the armory, which were meant for destruction, was Z88s, as you say, that were withdrawn from police service in the early 2000s. Guns that ordinary citizens had handed in previously in amnesties, and then guns that came from so-called SAP 13 stores, so guns that were in police stations and then brought to a central place. And that was the sort of the pool of guns that he had access to. So quite a lot of diversity of guns, but the Z88, a particular gun which the police use and had used, that was locally made and which that was a favorite of the gangs, was one of the largest numbers transferred in these consignments, Mandy.
And in your interviews, you recount your meetings with gangsters, you take us into safe houses. I was pretty terrified at times. What kind of access and reception did you get? And did you need to rely on fixers quite a lot for that?
The way that I have worked historically and having worked in the sort of illicit economy, including in my current job, doing research around it, generally, the process is to be introduced to people and to ask them for additional contacts, to use intermediaries, as you say, fixers in the journalistic world, but to be able to do as many interviews as possible, to try establish as far as possible what has gone on and what has been the evolution of this particular market. And in the book, I'm particularly interested, as you know, Mandy, in the impact that the guns in bulk consignments had on the gangs themselves. Did they strengthen particular gangs or weaken others? Did they lead to an outburst of violence, which indeed the book concludes that they did? How did they change relationships between gang bosses and ordinary gangsters? Previously, gangs had a limited number of guns and they were given out in the context of gang conflict. Suddenly, almost every gang member in some gangs had access to a gun. So it changed the dynamic of gang violence in the Cape Flats, I would say, from around 2010, 11. And that's, in fact, when you saw the ratcheting up of the homicide rate in and around Cape Town. So the conclusions I reach are that the guns had an enormous impact on excluded communities, on the Cape Flats, on the nature of the drug market, on the gang environment as a whole. So it's in terms of telling a story of the underworld, it provides, if you like, a particular window into a crucial period.
And you do look at a number of matters, court cases, matters that are in the news cycle as well. For example, the assassination of the lawyer Nuruddin Hassan, who you describe as a spider in the web. You look at the Prinsloo case itself. And then, of course, we've got the shooting of Charles Kinnear, the gang detective, which has really been consuming the news headlines and what's been going on there lately. But and you kind of pull these all together because it's all part of the same thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you make a really excellent point, and that's what the book is trying to do. You know, when you read the newspaper in South Africa, there's all these stories, individual murders, individual court cases, but the gun story is actually quite a consistent one, from the selling in the armory, you know, the Prinsloo case, to a set of other cases, to trials that will continue next year, to the Modak case, to Kinnear investigating, amongst other things, gun license fraud, to the use of, if you look at the Liftman charges, there's in the current court case proceeding now in Cape Town, there's illegal guns there. When Modak was arrested, the allegations were illegal guns were seized there. So all of these issues are the sort of golden thread. They are connected in multiple ways.
And then, of course, you know, Prinsloo is just one element in a broken system. What needs to be cleaned up altogether here? The security industry, the private militia, the taxi industry. This really is a much bigger problem, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, and the book looks at how big a problem it is. And it makes the argument that we need to start with the Central Firearms Registry to clean that up, allegations of corruption, to clean up the process in which guns are destroyed, to build trust around the policing system, to better regulate private security. There's really a lot to do. I think the reality and the good side of it is that we know what to do. It's a series of quite technical steps, and we need to get on and I think that will make a long-term difference to the availability of illicit mm-hmm. guns, to prevent guns leaking out of the state. These are guns that are effectively bought by taxpayers. So for me, the reason to write the book was to highlight this particular angle of the debate, which I think is crucial.
Well, Mark, thank you so much, and well done. An excellent and important book. It's Mark Shaw. The book is called Give Us More Guns, How South Africa's Gangs Were Armed. The book will terrify you, and I'm saying that it terrified me. It was pretty hectic, but it's such an important book, and this is a problem that absolutely needs to be highlighted.